Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay.
And me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
I am so excited about this podcast, The Bright Side. You guys are giving people a chance to shine a light on their lives, shine a light on a little advice that they want to share.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
Hi, this is Kurt Woodsmith. You remember me from such TV comedies as That 70s Show and That 90s Show on Netflix. I'll never forget the words that my grandfather said just before he kicked the bucket. He said, "Watch how far I can kick this bucket." People ask me where I get my dad jokes from. I tell them to listen to the Daily Dad Jokes podcast. Listen to Daily Dad Jokes every day on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, listen.
This is the first time in the history of this podcast where I realized there was no way to prepare at the level I wanted to prepare. Like, for whatever reason, this year, like, because we moved over, I feel like I wanted to play, like, every major release this year, and I realized, oh, yeah, nobody can do that. There's nobody at any site anywhere that can do that.
Point of order, we're 4 years old, we have no history. That's a little grandiose.
Right. Okay, fair enough. But nonetheless, didn't you feel the strain of like trying to get at least a sample of all these huge games this year?
I finished one of the games that made my list last like 8 hours ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
That's
so,
it.
Yes.
So you were definitely cramming.
Cramming till the buzzer. Yes. Our lives are very hard. You should never dream of being in the video games analysis industry growing up. It's too much of
That's
a burden.
Right.
Be an oncologist or some shit like that. Something easy.
Something easy. Mm-hmm. Cure cancer. Don't
tough.
Be a video game guy.
We do it for
you.
Yeah,
absolutely. No, but for real, I felt like an obligation, and I realized like, oh, so there's going to be, I'm going to have to admit like these are games I just didn't play.
Right? we always do shout outs.
Yeah.
This is one of some ship. I'm Michael Swaim. He's Adam Ganser. We always do honorable mentions, but as we discussed beforehand, I think we should also do, what you just said.
DNPs?
Well,
did not play as?
I have a couple shout outs of like games that I expect will be very good that I didn't get to in time. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Same. I agree. Most, and some of them are
Ragnarok. I didn't play. I know we covered it, but I just kind of like picked my way through that one. I hope it came off all right.
Yeah, I'm so glad you're
I
saying that.
I thought the safe
it
choice
feels good, to be honest.
Was to shit on it hard. I thought that would be like the safer, not having played it.
Feels good, to be honest.
Yeah.
Make a clean breast of it, yeah?
Yeah.
Feels good. Yeah. The one that I really think, that I've been thinking about for like the last 2 months, that I'm like, I just don't know when I'm going to get to that, is the Xenoblade Chronicles game that came out this year.
Dude, if you are a real gamer, and you think we're a fake gamer only for the specific reason that we never cover JRPGs, you're not wrong. They're too long.
Well,
they're always too long to get in within a month. That's the issue.
That's the that's the tough part of it.
That's the rub.
Yeah, we are gonna cover more huge JRPGs next year.
And
we are gonna do that.
I'm the type of guy that does not delete emails until that story thread is resolved in my life. And I mean, no matter how long.
Oh.
You will hear back from me eventually. So I still have an email telling Marina Ryman, who's a lovely guest, that we'll have her on when we cover Final Fantasy VII Remake Part 1, which we still have not hit. And that was like 3 years ago.
That
email's like aged like a fine cheese now. But if you're hearing this, Marina, I still intend to do that when we do that.
Yeah. Yeah, he does. He's actually been poking me about that about twice a year. Yeah.
Well, so it's a notable game, but that's not what we're here to discuss. Let's continue.
No. That's okay. But just to hype everybody up on that front, we will for sure be covering Chrono Trigger this
year.
We talked about that, and that's a game we're going to cover this year.
That's a spicy
not the only
Chrono.
JRPG.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of my
at least
favorites.
That one.
Spoiler.
Yeah. Yeah, I've never played it, so I'm excited to see how I feel about it. Okay, here we are. It's Game of the Year time.
Mm-hmm.
This is where we compare, I guess, our top five we settled on.
I hope so, because I'm not I'd be prepared to go to six. In fact, I'm going to mention my number six like we did last year. You know,
great.
I'll be honest, Adam, and I'm at peace with this, because I do think it's more of, you want our top five. Oh, it's so juicy and fun to compare and contrast the actual top five, but I still think it's fair and useful information for the audience to give, you know, more information than that, like an overview of the highlights and lowlights of the year. Because I do think our Game of the Year episodes usually overperform. Hi, people who only listen to this. Statistically, there must be some of you. So I think it's a nice time to look back at the year that was 2022.
Agreed.
I'll characterize it first and out the gate.
Sure.
It was like a fine year. It was a mid-year. Overall for video games.
Mid?
That's my rant.
Yeah. Well, there were so many games that didn't come out this year that would have sort of elevated the crop. You know, like almost everything was delayed into the new half of next year.
Mm-hmm.
So we're starting to get to a point where, like, you don't really know what the year is going to be until, like, September, you know?
But of course, so still a lot of great games, because there's just so many.
Yeah.
Just like if I had to characterize the year, not the best year ever of video game releases, for sure.
No.
Yeah.
No, that would be a big year if that ever happened.
So get hyped, but like, let's all calm down now also.
Get medium hyped, if you will. You want to start this time? I'm trying to figure out how the snake would work.
Yeah, okay, so we'll save. I mean, I forget how we did it last time, because I could like ramble a bit about my honorable mentions and shit. We could have that discussion,
that.
Then go to break and come back and start breaking down the top five.
Oh, yeah, okay, honorable mentions.
Let's get this stuff out of the way. So I'm going to stop, just so we're like climbing the hill in that order. So first, even below honorable mentions, and not even below, because that's the whole point. So wild cards, I want to get out of the way. I only have two.
Okay.
In the category, 2022, stuff I ran out of time to play, but I suspect might be very good.
Yeah.
Plague Tale Requiem, I know you share that as well. Yeah.
Yep.
Played the first one. It didn't make my GOTY list, but I was like, this is good. I bet the second one will be even better. Kind of like Senua's Sacrifice. Really excited for Senua's Saga. So I'm really excited for Plague Tale Requiem, and I've heard good things, but I didn't play it.
I played the first one like a month before the new one came out for the first time, and I was like, that was good, but I need a break. So I just haven't gotten around to it. But I believe it is a good game.
And then the other one, which I secretly suspect would be on my list, because I am a big supporter of VR as well as just a huge fan of this game. And it's a sequel. And in gaming, I find, like in albums, the sophomore effort is very make or break. And when it's good, it's usually super. Like season two of shows also, especially comedies. You know, it's like not uncommon to find your feet in the second iteration and really knock it out of the park. Empire Strikes Back. So, I need an Oculus 2, which I'm going to get for Christmas.
Good for you.
And the first thing I will load up is Moss Book 2. Cause I loved Moss, and I think that probably would have made my list, but I don't own the hardware yet.
Okay.
Yet.
I've been hearing, by the way, that Elite Dangerous is awesome on VR.
I fucked around with that a lot. Six months ago. I still haven't found my perfect, because we just covered No Man's Sky, which I fucked around in VR for like 4 hours and was like, it just chugs too much and it's not smooth enough. I really want my perfect Star Trek VR experience. Elite Dangerous is, some people will think it, that's the one. It's the perfect one. It's too overwhelming for me and stats sheet.
Okay.
Like, it's very micromanagey and intense. But
very technical.
Very technical. But all the stuff I say I want is there. So you should try it for sure.
I tinkered around for about 30 minutes with it on, like, when I just had a down day, like, I don't know, a year ago.
Yeah.
So, but I feel like in VR, it might be a fundamentally more interesting experience. Yeah, that's just a, I'm going to try that next year, probably.
Sure.
I have a couple didn't really plays, like, I tried them, but didn't really play them.
Mm-hmm.
So they didn't make my list. One of them is going to very much disappoint you, and I'm sorry. But I only played about 2 hours of Neon White, a game that was unapologetically fun. It was very fun, but it just, it never, the timing didn't line up for me. I was like, yeah, I want to play this, but I'm going to get back to it. And then I just really didn't. So I bet that game's awesome. Maybe it would have changed my game of the year list if I had stuck all the way through it. The story seems kind of dumb to me though, so I'm a little concerned. The other one is Cult of the Lamb. And the reason I didn't play that is because everyone who I know who played it didn't like it, although the hype was real about it everywhere else. So, like, I was like, okay, it seems like mixed messaging, so I never got around to it.
It didn't even make my honorable mentions. I do like the art style. I do like the idea of combining a roguelite combat, basically a Hades-alike, with, you know, a town builder. But I just didn't think in either case they were good enough. Like, they're both really cute, but not as... I mean, especially if you just played Hades, the combat just doesn't hold a candle to the tightness and crispness and how it actually feels like you get better at it and the enemies are difficult and you learn. It's it's just not good enough. I'm sorry, Cult of the Lamb. Yeah.
No, it's okay. Now I have a couple honorable mentions that just didn't make the list, but I thought were good, if we're ready for that.
Yeah.
Okay, great. The bottom tier here is Marvel Snap. Marvel Snap is clearly a phenomenon, and also it's really fun. Like, so if you haven't played it, it's a mobile game. I'm pretty sure it's free. Isn't it free, or do you pay for it? I forget.
It's free. I forget if you can pay to go faster, better. I don't know if it's one of those, but you can play it free. I am grinding and unlocking stuff. Yeah.
It's a slightly more complex Gwent. Maybe not even more complex.
It's a little different than Gwent. My only thought on it, and the only thing I'll say is, I find it underwhelming specifically because I'm huge. My favorite game right
you
now
like Gwent.
For a year or two, no, is Smash Up, which is I would say Snap is very closely, almost to a ripoff level. It's a simplified Smash Up. So if you've played Snap and you feel like you're ready for Big Boy Snap, please look into Smash Up. It's an incredible game. I'm obsessed with it.
That's fair. I mention it because mobile games like this aren't enough for me to get hooked into it.
Mm-hmm.
Although, as you'll see, I do like simple games. Like, I'm okay with calling a simple game a great game. And I think this is, I'm not a Marvel guy, so it doesn't, that doesn't get me. And I think it would get me if, like, this game would be amazing if I loved Marvel.
It's funny. I'm not a Marvel movie guy. I am drawings of Marvel characters on cards and comics guy. Oh, my God. I'm so into just seeing Spider-Man on my phone. Like, that still gets me.
Okay.
I'm like, ooh.
So you probably liked it better
than
I did.
Craven the Hunter. I got that card. No, I'm just saying I like collecting Marvel cards.
Yeah.
I still, when I play Snap, my overwhelming feeling, this is pointless to say because I just say it's like a... Oh man, I wish I could show these people Smash Up. I wish everyone could come to my house and play Smash Up.
It's a subpar version. Well, all I can say is this person who never played Smash Up but did love the shit out of Gwent.
Gwent is good too.
Gwent is awesome. That's a mini game in The Witcher. If you
what do you think of the Horizon Forbidden West mini game where you put pieces on the board and
I liked
are
it.
Like,
okay, yeah. So I'm going to talk a little bit spoilers. I'm going to talk a little bit about Horizon Forbidden West today. Mm-hmm. And like the way that fits into that is probably like I didn't get to appreciate everything about the game because there was too many things. So like I might like that better if I was like, okay, I'm gonna clear out a month and really do this game like as hard as it wants.
It's the point reason you play the game, but man, I remember all the way back to FFX and Blitzball. I got heavily into Blitzball, and I'm like, this is its own whole game.
Yeah, they had a bunch of whole games in there.
That's cool.
Completely,
I still like that touch.
So yeah, so Marvel Snap belongs deserves to get mentioned honorably, and it has been. Also, and this is my final honorable mention. Also honorable mention because I'm not a troll. God of War Ragnarok, obviously, because that was a good game.
No, boo.
No. I think it's a good game. I don't think it's a bad game.
Get out of here.
No, I think it's a good game.
I'm over it.
I don't hate
it. Previous episode.
Yeah, I don't hate it. I think it's good. I don't think it's amazing.
Adam, I'll tell you, my whole identity is now built around shitting on God of War Ragnarok.
Good for you. Hopefully it'll get your attention at least.
The contrarian.
That's fine. The last game I wanted to mention was Stray. The indie game Stray, which I did enjoy, but I felt ultimately lacked depth and substance.
I found it disappointingly shallow.
Yeah, it's a little shallow, but I thought it was a great world to be in, and being a cat was as fun as I hoped it would be.
Didn't make my honorable mentions because it basically comes down to, cute cat, it's fun to be a cat. You got the how to control a cat pretty good.
Okay.
Nice. Yeah. I don't care about the robot characters.
Oh,
they don't
I like
say
the robot
enough
characters.
Or have enough going on.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
That slipped just below. I considered it, but I actively don't want Stray to get attention. I thought it was disappointing.
Okay. Well, you've succeeded in quashing my honorable mention.
So I'm
sir.
Like, no, Stray. Yeah. Stray, no. Stray, bad.
Let's hear yours.
All right. I'll go fast because I have more, but my reasoning is very straightforward in all cases. Kirby and the Forgotten Land.
Mm.
Nothing mind-blowing, but I really like 3D platformers. We just covered Mario 64, and in that tradition, it's like a solid, not bad 3D platformer.
It's a new one.
Nintendo's usual care and attention to making the levels interesting and engaging. It was just fun to play through. Exact same thing I could say about Tiny Tina's Wonderland. See the whole episode. Adam was surprised that I liked it more than he thought, which is totally fair.
I am.
And the only reason is because I played it all through with Abe, who's one of my best pals, ignoring the story and just being like, this is a fun toy, which is rare for me if you know the podcast. I rarely let myself go to the toy aspect of it, but I did in this case because Abe was along for the ride and we just chatted about movies and shit the whole time. So I was like, that was fun. And I think it was notably accomplished this year. Stanley Parable Ultra Deluxe, specifically the Ultra Deluxe drop, came out this year. So it's kind of cheating because Stanley Parable is an older game. I just fell in love with it this year, and I wanted to squeeze it on because I will say I specifically thought the Ultra Deluxe editions are, if anything, even smarter and funnier and more. It's like Gary Larson released a couple more Far Side cartoons, and you're like, hey, he's still got it. I really liked the editions in Ultra Deluxe. If you're into what is a very specific thing that I understand, like when Adam went, whatever.
No,
I'm like, I totally get that. Or I don't know if you softened on that, but the game, I hope we cover it someday, but it's just little meta clever diddles.
We will cover it.
But it's an acquired taste.
So we should cover it because the thing about that game that deserves to be mentioned is that it's much more about experience than most games. Like, it's a ludonarrative on an artistic level, like on a conceptual
level. It's an interactive
narrative.
Essay about game design. Yeah.
And that, it deserves, in a John Gage kind of way, it deserves to be covered for that reason, I would say.
Mm.
You know? Like that, and I don't mean to reduce it to being not fun, but it's an experiment, and I think that's interesting about it.
Hey, speaking of not fun experiments, gotta making up some time in the air. Adam, I hope you like this more than me. It's just genre-wise not my cup of tea, so I didn't plug into it, and it made me realize something interesting about myself that I want to dig into very quickly.
Okay.
The game is Pentiment.
Ah.
A game that Adam, I think, was surprised, or was like, I totally thought you would really like that.
I thought
I would, too. It's, so people know, so they get little recommendation treats. In a nutshell, it's a murder mystery. I'd compare it to Name of the Rose, a famous novel by Umberto Eco.
Yep.
It's basically a medieval murder mystery, but what's cool is it's like a point-and-click adventure, mostly dialogue-driven and choice-driven, but it's drawn like an illuminated medieval manuscript, and it's very cool and beautiful, and the kind of thing I would really like on paper, get it? But it made me realize, as much as I love noir, all the trappings of noir, and I loved Wolf Among Us because it was noir with a message about class and politics and things and personal stakes, I don't like a whodunit whodunits are sterile to me. I never care about someone fictional who was made up for the purposes of this is dead. Can you figure out which of these eight people did it? At the end of the day, I engage with story to feel something or learn something about life, not do a puzzle. It's not bad. I just don't attach to it. It doesn't mean anything to me. So about a third of the way through, I was like, I really don't care who killed this guy. And I just stopped. But
that's interesting.
I thought it was cool. I thought, like, people should play this, though. It's neat.
I'll say more about that a little later.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
Evil West, I said my reasons on Ragnarok. I think people should play Evil West because the plot twists are better than I expected. And even though it's firmly a double-A bargain bin, like, knockoff, quote-unquote, of God of War's dynamics, the combat adds guns, and the combat loop in Evil West is really fun. And last but not least, I actually think it's more of an incredibly clever way to obviate the festival circuit and present a decent student film in a very cost-effective and captivating way, which is brilliant. But I would refer to the game Immortality as of like a very complicated DVD menu game. And I know that that is a game. Like, anything is a game. Just like, you know, if you put a twig through a leaf, that's art because you did something. But I just can't justify putting it on my list, even though I found it captivating and really effective and cool. So in case people are interested, what it is it's a 202 clips that you have to unlock by watching them one at a time and cross-referencing the clips to each other, where you slowly unlock a web of basically interconnected clips that ultimately you can just watch in chronological order. That give you the story of a tragic career of this actress who didn't work out and then died mysteriously. And if you play a bunch of the clips backwards, you start to find out even creepier, like, metaphysical, you know, there's a, what do you call it? Not Orwellian, Lovecraftian overtones to it, and mystical characters that are actually supernatural. And you piece together a cool sci-fi horror story, basically, about, like, what happened to this woman. And I did find the jump scares really scary. The acting incredible, especially from the part of the person who's just called the One, the supernatural being, was incredible.
I'm gonna quibble with some of the acting, but go ahead.
I didn't think across the board.
Okay, all right,
acting
great.
Was good.
Okay,
by any stretch. But when I realized that ultimately the only gameplay, so to speak, was clicking on things, and it doesn't matter. I didn't play any of the clips until I had clicked on every. I just click yep. clicked while I yep. listened to music or watched a show until I had all 200. Like, I Googled how many clips are there, and I click till I have all 200. Then I watched them in order, and then I fully understand what the project was. I could have just watched that at a film festival in order. So I don't think it rises to the level of being a game for me, but it was cool.
Well, so the problem is, that's an interesting take. That's the problem is that, like, I think you and I have done enough film editing that this game super doesn't appeal to me. Like, it's because, like, it's a really inefficient way to look at film. You know what I mean? Like as I was playing,
but
it,
an interesting thought experiment, because you're looking at uncut dailies
right.
and rehearsals.
That's all I do
all
the
shit.
Time.
Yeah.
So like and you're doing it through this old school moviola process. That, you know, I get it. It's that's cool. But as a person who's edited, you know, 1,000 hours of film at this point, it's like
right.
It's like I don't want to sit here and backtrack through
you
the clips.
You felt like looking at the board, and you're like, I don't want to edit all the dailies.
Like, come on,
shit. Yeah.
You know, like, yeah, I want to get to the bottom of it because that's what editing is, and like. This is a little bit more like, what if, like, if you haven't done film editing, you'll probably enjoy it more, I think. Like, because you won't
yeah,
be frustrated by that.
Might be more interested in
yeah.
it and feel like it's more of a game.
Yeah. That was my takeaway. I was like, oh, I think I'm the exact wrong person for this.
But didn't the producer in you think, oh my God, what a brilliant way to save
I thought
money
it was...
and get interest to your film? Because
sure.
they
sure.
did things like the scenes that would have a bunch of expensive effects in them. You're just watching footage of a table read of that scene. And I'm like, oh my God, you sly bastards. Like, I see what you did there.
It definitely was made in a way that was very budget conscious. And
it's Blair Witchy and it's cleverness.
It was very smart. Yeah, it was very clever. And I think a lot of people will really enjoy it, honestly.
Yeah.
I just, you know, Yeah, if you've ever worked with film, the fact that it's not in Premiere will drive you fucking crazy. Or Avid even, you know, like just not being able to scrub through clips, just stuff like that. But really cool idea. I don't want to take away from it. Just wanted to add to your thoughts there.
So I guess I'll name my last honorable mention now. And then
you have
I really
more?
Should get to break.
You're just full of honorable mentions.
Well, I like video games.
Okay, all right. Keep going.
And turtles and corn.
Okay.
Those are all the memes. This would be my number six, firmly. Like, better than all of the games I just mentioned.
Okay.
For me. But our game of the year is a favorite list for us, right?
Yes.
So hopefully you've gotten to know our styles. If they align with one of us, then you're like, I should check that out. But for me, number six with a bullet, and it's only not higher because of its lack of ambition, but mm-hmm. it's so addictively fun, and is Vampire Survivors.
Oh, wow.
Which is a game that I saw so many people in my circles and into niche indie video games get into this year. It had kind of a big low-key moment. But if you look at screenshots, you feel like, I get it. Or like, I don't have to do that. It's so simple. It's just like sprites and you shoot things at them. And when you find out how simple it is, meaning it's like an idle game. You auto attack. So all you control is movement. That's all you do. WASD keys. You just move around the screen. Mm-hmm. That's the only way you can engage with the game. It's so fucking addictive. And I'm like in a primal way that feels like Tetris-y or Pac-Man-y. That I'm obsessed or like I'm playing it constantly, but it's not higher in terms of the sheer amount of badass fun I'm having. It is off the charts. And I do recommend if you've been on the fence, because it looks so simplistic, give it a shot for a few hours. I imagine that will be short lived, that like the addiction will peak and then I'll be like, I get it. Cause you just do the same thing over and over and over. That's why it's not higher on the list. But boy, is it fun. What a stupid, dumb, fun, good idea with no story where you're just like, shoot a million arrows at these guys. It reminds me of Tower Defense.
Yep,
remember when
I
had a moment? Yep. Yeah. It feels like that. Compulsive.
This game didn't strike for me.
Did you try it, though?
I tried it a little bit. Yeah, it just, you know.
Yeah.
I
didn't get its hooks into you.
Nah. Yeah. I'm realizing, thanks, as I say once a year, the art style thing matters more to me than I'd like to admit.
It looks literally like sprites they copy pasted from Castlevania games.
Yeah. And like sometimes I have a hard time getting past that. so that was part of it there. Sounds like we're ready to take our first break. And when we come back, we'll get into the list proper.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
Thank you for taking the light, and you're going to shine it all over the world, and it makes me really happy.
I never imagined that I would get the chance to carry this honor and help be a part of this legacy.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
Hey guys, I'm home.
Everyone knows that it's Dad's job to be a bit of a joker.
Sorry I'm late, everyone. There was an accident at the factory. Monty fell into the upholstery machine. Don't worry though, he's fully recovered.
Good one, Dad.
Did you get the pizza for dinner?
So he likes to keep everyone happy with some dad jokes.
Yep, right here. I had a coupon. And it saved me a lot of dough.
Well, the truth is, Dad is just a fun guy.
Hey, I'm not a mushroom.
Please stop. Where does he get these stupid jokes from?
He listens to the Daily Dad Jokes podcast.
Oh, great. More dad jokes for me.
We've delivered over 15,000 jokes to over 3 million listeners, and man, the postage fees are killing us. Listen to the Daily Dad Jokes podcast every day on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And guess what? So are we.
Just in case you forgot, I'm Tori Deal. I'm a 6-time finalist and a Challenge champion.
And I'm Anissa Ferrer, and I've been gracing your screens for the last 2 decades. I am a veteran challenger and challenge all-star.
And speaking of all-stars, All Stars 4 is finally here.
I'm going to be honest. I literally thought this day was never going to come.
Well, the challenge gods have answered our prayers, and we're going to be right here along with you fans covering every episode on the podcast.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. old school legends, modern power players, redemption seekers, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
Anyone can win, relationships matter, and only one all-star will claim the title of Challenge Champion.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We are back.
Yeah, we are.
Woo! Woo! I had to woo a second time because that was a lot of good honorable mentions.
Yeah.
I'm sorry I showed so little restraint and picked a lot of games. Thank you, Adam, for being more...
Not at all.
The responsible one.
Do you ever think about ongoing games, like that they deserve mentioning a game of the year spot?
I could see doing a whole episode of the best support we think of. I honestly, because I'm old, it still doesn't always hit me right. Like, I don't know. Like, some games that are early released that I hop into, I'm like, this taints. Now I remember, I'd rather wait for full release. Now I remember the feeling of when this game wasn't good and the threadbareness is showing.
Mm.
Now it kind of taints my, I really want the show to be ready and for the curtain to raise and for the full experience to hit me in the face with all the seams tight and all the paint on, you know?
Yeah, the one spin through the course. That's what you want. Yeah.
But I don't have my way, as we know. It's equally valid and becoming more and more common that from inception or from a very early stage to the finished game, 2 years beyond going gold or shipping, the game is growing and growing, and they want some portion of humans on Earth to be addicted to their game and play it for 20 years. And like, there has to be new content to support that, or, you know, 8 years, 15 years, however long they can ride this pony. And I do think that we should discuss games that grew the most, where games where it really matters, where they really did the work and grew over years. Yeah,
I think it would be hard for the two of us to do the kind of dialogue about that here that it probably deserves. But I mention it because I feel like if there was ever a year in the last five or six that there was an ongoing game that really improved, believe it or not, I think Destiny improved a lot this year narratively.
Oh, dude, and
yeah.
I mean, they recently shuttered it, but Destin over at IGN, my old cohort, he ran a podcast where they only covered new additional things that are happening in the latest patch or update of Destiny.
Oh, wow.
And it ran for years.
Yeah.
Like, the Destiny, Bungie does, obviously, whether like Adam, you love it, or like me, it's become a bewildering forest of nonsense. You have to admit they're like, they're heads down working on Destiny all the time, and they're definitely trying to support it, for sure.
I just want to be clear for everybody who, like, I know that I bring up Destiny all the time. I find I also find it overwhelming and confusing now, because I didn't play it
unless
much this
you
year.
Stick with it daily.
Yeah, yeah, and I'm not gonna do almost. That I'm not gonna do that because I have more things to do than that. But I do think that the way they're delivering story right now and the way they're complexifying their universe is what I think anybody who is in an ongoing game wants out of that game. I think they're delivering the real promise of Destiny in terms of story is finally happening. And
really? Would you say it's moving away from the Marvel model and towards the Star Trek model? like where it's just sci-fi stories?
Okay. Some.
That's what I'm looking for.
It's what's happening is that people are no longer sort of stuck in their factions, but like new alliances and like shades of gray
like
are existing.
The Expanse. Yeah. Right. Where there can be shifting alliances and adult level political intrigue.
And that's happening now in this
Great.
World. And that's interesting. I think they're also undoing slowly their decision to like retract some playable places and like being like, you know what? If Call of Duty can take up 200 gigs on your hard drive, then fuck it. So will we. So I'm just
here's
mentioning
all the Mario Kart courses. It,
right.
It makes your PS5 smoke, but you're welcome.
But now you can do anything we've ever given you to do. So I'm just mentioning it. It wouldn't have made my game of the year list anyway, but I think there's a place for ongoing games, and that's the one that stood out to me this year. So you ready with your number five?
We better be.
Yeah, we better.
Yeah, I don't want it to be a 2-hour episode.
Okay.
It's kind of nice that we padded, because I actually find, or, you know, I only have a bit to say, and then I'm like, go, play it.
Yeah.
So it'll go quick. Yeah. My number five, and huge shout out to, I don't know if it's their real life meet name or their username, but Joanna Blackheart.
Mm-hmm.
On the Small Beans Discord, if you like our chatter and you'd like to engage with us through Typey Types, by the way, our proprietary podcasting network, Small Beans, over at patreon.com/smallbeans or Small Beans anywhere you get your podcasts, also has a Discord component where we hang out with our audience and our community and chat. And we recently opened that Discord up to anyone. So, I think you have to dig through my Twitter to find the link. But I'll put it in the copy for this episode. But if you want to join us over on Discord, you can potentially sway us and change our list at the last second, as Joanna Blackheart did, by recommending Citizen Sleeper.
Wow,
Citizen
really?
Citizen Sleeper is my number five pick. It took me about 8 hours to complete. I completed it in one sitting because I was so, so captivated. I finished it about 10 hours ago. And it is, speaking of The Expanse, I would say I actually wish the writing were even more sophisticated and more evolved and more complexified. But the writing was good, solid. Like, for my money, it's just a notch below some of the games I consider to have the best writing, like Disco Elysium and Sunless Skies. But I'm talking about a special genre of games that I love that most people don't like, that are like reading a book. There's no character acting. There's no voice acting. And it's primarily text driven. So it's a wall of text game. But it's basically Deep Space Nine, the game, and mashed up with Blade Runner. You are a human sentience that's been digitized and put in a decaying robot body, and you have to figure out how to escape this space station before your body completely craps out. And while you do, you meet an incredibly compelling cast of characters, and you roll dice to determine, you know, how you get the story meted out to you. But it's basically story and dialogue driven. And the only thing to really unlock is the next beat of whichever character arc you're most interested in at the time. But it's a very stylish presentation, a very unique twist on dice rolling. Citizen Sleeper. And not like an earth-shattering story at the end, which I think is why it's not higher on the list. But if you like The Expanse or Star Trek or Deep Space Nine, it felt like, wow, they did a little miniature version of that. It's like the Mighty Max version of that. Like, each person's arc is almost a recognizable, like, it's that kind of Star Trek-y story. I get it. Oh, it's like a Blade Runner riff. Okay. And it all came together really well for me.
Okay.
Citizen Sleeper, I loved it.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
This is literally the first time I saw those words. So,
nice.
Although I do think the elements sound fun. So mm-hmm. I'm excited to try that. Okay. This is, I think if I pick one thing that's going to piss you off, it's this one, Mike. So I'm just letting you know, because I'm slightly bending the rules here. But my number five is, it didn't technically come out this year.
You warned me. So
okay,
I'm
great,
fine,
great, great. Oh, I didn't know if I warned you. I didn't know if I warned you. Okay, great.
Yeah.
So it didn't technically come out this year, but I think it's inextricably bound with this year. And that is Wordle. My number.
You think you're so smart.
I do not.
You're so
first of all,
New York Times.
I don't need you to shit on my picks.
Yeah,
I don't need that. So
Wordle was in fact the most impactful game of the year.
They did not invent it, by the way. They just bought it. Wordle was invented by a guy, and I mention it because there's so many
Dr. Wordle.
Yeah, Mr. Matt Wordle.
Wordle the turtle.
I don't know what his name is. Anyway, it came out to very little fanfare last year, but then it just really took off this year on the internet, obviously. And I mention it because it's kind of pieces of it are in almost all the games that you play with RPG elements. Like almost the entire game itself exists in Fallout. You know, there's a lot of games that use the pieces that Wordle has together, but I think that it shows there's something fun about the collective effort to connect via a game. Like, it's actually a really effective social game. more than even a game itself, like people's ability to sort of like, oh, you got it in three? Oh, yeah, I got it the first time, right?
And there's an old board game called Mastermind that does it with colors, which is the first time I encountered this exact form of encryption game. But it's just Mastermind with letters. But the fact that it's letters and that we all have this shared knowledge of letters in this order make a word is so much better than colors. And then you add that it's PvP and you compare with everyone in the world. It is brilliant. Like, it's
exactly
a great idea.
It's brilliant in its simplicity. It's a massive achievement in its shareability. And like, I think the New York Times kind of killed the vibe. So like, it's never going to be what it was for about a month on Twitter, basically. But I think that it shows why we like games and the aspect of gaming that's about competing and having fun with your friends, almost like carnival games used to be, when people would like walk around and like, you know, strength tests and shit like that. It's almost like that. Or like a trivia game or something. Like, it has the same effect.
If you're younger, by the way, if you're like younger listening to this, when we were 17, 18, that's all people did constantly. It was carnival games. We would just strength test. That was it. It was like hula hoops, strength test.
That's all there was.
Milk bottle.
Yep.
The milk bottle thing.
Shooting targets with a skeet gun.
What is this? The 20s?
Yeah. No, but I think it's serving the same need. Wait a minute. Your belittling remarks are inappropriate. It's serving the same need.
They usually are.
You know, this game is in a long tradition of finding this thing that we're all kind of competing at, but also enjoying together. And I think it's really successful, so much so that this guy made a fortune on a thing that couldn't have taken him that long to do. You know what I mean? Like,
to program.
Like, what a lottery ticket, you know? So I think if you're going to commemorate this year in gaming, I think Wordle belongs.
Wordle crushed it.
Indeed.
No, I'm a piece of shit. I'm just
being a real troll.
Just being a prick.
That's a five. That's a five letter word.
Yeah, it's
by the way.
It's a great fine choice. I think it's very smart.
Thank you. Should I go? Should I go fourth? Since we're serpentining, is that the idea?
Oh sure. Okay. Sure. Let's
great.
Do it like that.
Okay. Wonderful. My number four, is Horizon Forbidden West. The reason it's number four for me is that I think it was a little bloated, and that bloating kind of diluted the impact of what it did really well. But like, even a 4-hour return journey to it showed me, like, my God, this thing is the most gorgeous looking game I've ever seen. I think it's still the best looking game I've ever seen. And what a world. And there's some incredible acting
in
it.
What a world. I'm melting.
Why are you so weird today, bro?
Write in if I'm crazy, people, but I thought iconically, what a world, is what the Wicked Witch says when she's melting.
She says what a world. Does
that's
she really?
The only neuron the world's words what a world are connected to in my brain.
And they,
oh, what a
they
world
had to
I'm
fly
melting.
Out of your head. Thank you. No, so it's a really incredible like landscape and stuff. Like, there's an expansion coming out next year, and I'm like, I might replay that whole game because of the expansion. I don't think it has the best story even in the series so far, but I think it has a pretty good story for a video game, and like, it's still a really great idea. Is it perfectly executed? No. Is it gonna be one of the greatest games of all time? I would say no. I don't even know if that series will create one of the best games of all time at this point, but it's a really creative idea, and there was a lot of very fun things in this game. Maybe too many fun things in this game. It deserves to be mentioned because it was an incredible achievement by a game designer. And now Mike's turn.
Wordle? We're still talking about Wordle, right? So if I am being extra, apologies to the listener. The first day of my 2-week winter break starts right after we wrap here.
Oh, fun.
So I might be having a manic episode.
Okay.
My number four is Neon White.
Oh, okay.
And the first thing I will say, so I think the art style is awesome. I love how everyone looks, especially the little stupid cat angels and shit. But the story is dumb, and it does bake down to like a Love Hina, if anyone's familiar with that anime, or like just like dating sim level. What's the drama here? Oh, the green ranger's mad at the yellow ranger.
Yeah.
So ultimately the whole story half, it was like Hades, but I actually found myself invested in the storylines in Hades because Supergiant's writing just meets me more where I'm at. My cup of tea, my lane. You know, it's my podcast, so my opinions. But what I want to say about Neon White that really did click for me, and I'm sorry I didn't for you, Adam, but I love Sonic games, as listeners will know. I love pinball, and I like going fast, and I think that Sonic, like, when Sonic went from 2D to 3D was when I switched to being a Mario guy, and I never liked the Mario vibe or lore as much. I find it kind of generic and cutesy.
Mm-hmm.
Sonic in 3D is just not fun to me. And man, I'm sorry.
You try that new one? Let's try the new one.
A bunch of people probably just flipped out. I will try Frontiers. I haven't.
It's okay.
But he's had a few different forays into, there was just like Sonic 3D. And then of course, Sonic Adventure for the Dreamcast, which I actually thought was a high point. Sonic Adventure is pretty solid, but it still doesn't capture to me the pinball feeling of going crazy fast and not knowing what's going to happen. And I got to say, I feel like Neon White finally gamifies in three dimensions. Neon White is the 3D Sonic game that I always was hoping for. It feels like the game that Sonic in 3D should have been from the beginning. If people aren't familiar, the plot is you're a dead person in heaven who can win their way back. And it's in the anime style, and it's like a dating sim. And I don't really care about that.
The plot is really, really loosely grafted onto the experience.
Funny, dumb.
Yeah. Like... you got to move on from the plot, like, really. You just have to.
A lot of games are doing this now. It's the peanut butter chocolate thing. It's like Cult of the Lamb, where it's like, we took Hades, but it also has a building, a town sim. So Neon White's is, there's a dating sim story thing, which I was like, that part's fine. But the gameplay loop is that there's these very, I thought, smartly designed levels that really, they reminded me of the shrines in Breath of the Wild. Each one makes you think differently in an evolving way. So towards the end of the game, you're thinking much more complexly about the space than you were in the early levels. And you do these runs, and the only goal is to get to the end in time, and faster and faster and faster. And the exchange of the game is that you pick up guns, and the guns are one use only, and you can either use them, I'm sorry, like a few uses. So let's say I pick up a rifle. I can either use it four times to fire four rifle shots, and sometimes I'll need to do that to clear out enemies or break obstacles. But that rifle is also a traversal move. So, for example, I can spend that rifle and discard it to jump, double jump, or I can expend it to dash forward. And you will eventually be thinking things like, and then some of the enemies have effects like, so you can bounce off these enemies and you'll need to, or you'll crash and die. So finally, when you're like at an end level of this game and you actually get platinum on it, you're thinking things like, okay, I gotta do two rifle shots to that guy, jump, dash forward, use the last rifle shot to break that, pick up the shotgun, which is a double jump, which will make me be able to rappel to the treasure chest, which will give me enough pistol shots to kill the boss and get to the end in time. And that is so satisfying to me. And it takes me back to my early days playing Sonic the Hedgehog.
It's a really, really fun game in terms of motion. Like motion and...
It's so kinetic and frantic.
It's also one of the first games that I've played in a very long time to make you strategize about platforming. Like that's a combination of things you wouldn't see maybe ever, rarely.
I got to parkour very efficiently.
Yeah, how can
to accomplish
what do I
this?
Do to get from here to there? And then, like, how do I do it fast? So it's awesome. I really think, I wish that somebody had, like, about, like, 3 months before the game came out, just, like, stopped and said, let's reskin what this is. Same game, just totally different plot that actually coheres. Like, I don't know why the cards are guns and why they're angels. Like, just stuff that's, like, I think actually takes away from how good it is. But that's a
The trappings.
Remark.
I was like, all I care is, like, boil this loop down. This is
well,
genius.
Yeah, the loop is
whatever
so
framing,
good.
I don't care.
It's so good that I feel like the packaging is absolutely taking away from it. Like, it could have been
or
a best
if you
best
like
game.
Anime dating sim stuff, which some people do, then this is the part, like, you'll double love this
I
game,
guess so I'm sure there's somebody who this is their thing.
My number three, and I can go real fast because we're serpentining, is Horizon Forbidden West. I won't repeat the stuff Adam said. I gotta say, I agree with my partner Jen, who idly walks by and sees the video games I play and commented on while I was playing this and Ragnarok. How come The Last of Us 2 is like 8 years old, but it's still the best looking video game that's ever come out? I agree with that. I think nothing has ever looked as good as I'm playing The Last of Us 2 right now. It still looks better.
It's 2 years old.
And,
but yeah,
to me, or well, okay. All right. All right. Fair yeah. enough. But it's older and it's, I still think it's punching above its weight. I'm sorry. I'm terrible at time.
It's okay.
I do that all the time. But the things I wanted to say about Horizon, Horizon's a great series. See our episode with Jason Pargin about mm-hmm. it. I think it, you know, I love the central concept that they introduced in the first one of knocking shit off other shit. You know what it is. It's the future past primal Aloy Huntress killing robot dinosaurs one. It's one of the year's triple A's that's like expectable formula, meaning like, you know, it's like The Witcher. It's like it's the open world one. You go around, you do missions. It, as we discussed in the episode, I thought a decent but uninventive, fairly uninventive, Marvel-esque, Avengers-esque storyline shapes up. I thought it was handled really competently, but I'm kind of sick of everything being like the Avengers.
Yeah, agreed.
I thought the art and especially the costume design is unparalleled.
It's awesome.
So like yeah. a bunch of good, a bunch of bad. For my money, probably the best AAA, like super expected traditional open world AAA experience this year. And yet ultimately I feel myself forgetting it a little bit and I'm like, it's kind of becoming Assassin's Creed-y to me where I'm like, and I'll play the next one. They're always fun. But there's like a ceiling to them or whatever. It's fine. It's my number three. It was good. I bet it took lots and lots and lots of work from a lot of people.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, you can't praise that part of it enough. It's like, what a triumph
That's
for
a
so many people, you know?
So I got to say like, for my money, like fun per pound, my list might be different, but
right.
I'm not going to put Vampire Survivors above Horizon Forbidden West. I'm also doing honor to the level of cooperation
yeah.
and teamwork that went into the ambitions of the game, right? So,
like, if I could make a movie that, even if it was a bad movie, but it was in this world, like, I would feel like, my
right.
God, what an accomplishment.
Great world.
Yeah.
Like, if you named Wordle number one, I might be pissed.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm like, all right,
come
this
on
guy
now.
Doesn't need that
exactly.
much, you dick sucking. You know what I mean? Yeah, all right. Serpentine, back to you, my friend.
Okay, that's pretty good. All right, my number three, and I was very surprised by this, is Pentiment. I really liked
oh,
it.
Great, I'm glad you enjoyed it that
I
much.
I really
yeah.
liked it. Now, I'll say this, it is, when you say it's a whodunit, It is the trappings of a murder mystery are in this game, but it actually is more of an exploration of a community over a series of generations.
Oh, it's super educational about the medieval
That's
period.
That's also
as well,
what's cool about
which
it.
Which is
yeah.
boring to me, but fun if you like that kind of
well,
thing.
I
yeah.
think, yeah, that's true. I mean, it isn't like that wasn't the sexiest time period in the world, but I do think like it does a nice job of gamifying and like, you know, NPC-ifying people's lives from that time period and like the politics of that time period. And I think that is really fun and interesting. I really liked Name of the Rose. I didn't love the movie, but I really liked the book. And I've always
oh,
wanted to write. In fact, I pitched this to Mike several times, a medieval murder mystery. I love that idea. So this is like right up my alley. It's also by Obsidian. Those of you who are tracking what studio. So it's got a little, there's a little bit of fun, like, there's definitely a wink going on in it. You know, like there's that playful thing that Obsidian has, like they have it. The game is in the trappings of medieval art, which means I think some people that's going to like hook you and get you all the way through. And some people it's going to repel you. And if it repels you, I don't know if you'll ever find your way back. I really feel like that's a thing that you have to really like. But what's awesome about it to me, like what made it stick around is, for a while, you're like frustrated because it doesn't get to the murder mystery quick enough. And then the murder mysteries, because there's three of them, actually, spoilers, there's mm-hmm. three, not just one.
Yeah.
The murder mysteries are very tenuous, and there it seems to be like no real clear answer ever to any of them. And that's purposeful because, you know, the murder mystery is just sort of a way of you like deciding people's fates in this town and watching how the town gets slowly crushed by these choices. And by these circumstances and ultimately sort of like tries to rebel against the abbot that's exploiting them and all this stuff. And the generational piece of it is really affecting, I think.
So then that sounds like, because I quit at midstream, it may actually have evolved into a message I would care about.
I think
that sounds
so.
Like I would care about it.
I think
but
so.
But I bailed when I thought it was going to be like, oh, it's like Clue in medieval times.
It's not that. It's
I've lost interest. Okay, interesting.
It actually takes place over, I'm going to say 50 years, 40, 50 years. So like you'll play with somebody who's a toddler and they end up being 30 or 40 at the end of the story. And you've seen how their whole right. life has gone and how this town has sort of evolved and where they fit into it. Largely because of these key events that you are there for, it does end up wrapping up in a very murder mystery way that is less interesting than the story of the town. But the third act of the game really does sort of get at the themes more directly and in a more fun way. So if you're the kind of person that's like, okay, murder mystery's fine, but I kind of just like being in a world and like getting to know characters, that's what this game really is. It hit me right in the right zone. It's a little murder mystery. It's a little medieval history, a period of time that I feel like is completely neglected, in our education. And I thought it was really great. So it's my number three for that reason. Should we go to a break now and do our two and one on the other side? What do you think, Mike?
Yep. Let's do
it. Okay. See you on the other side.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
Thank you for taking the light, and you're going to shine it all over the world, and it makes me really happy.
I never imagined that I would get the chance to carry this honor and help be a part of this legacy.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
Hey guys, I'm home.
Everyone knows that it's Dad's job to be a bit of a joker.
Sorry I'm late, everyone. There was an accident at the factory. Monty fell into the upholstery machine. Don't worry though, he's fully recovered.
Good one, Dad.
Did you get the pizza for dinner?
So he likes to keep everyone happy with some dad jokes.
Yep, right here. I had a coupon. And it saved me a lot of dough.
Well, the truth is, Dad is just a fun guy.
Hey, I'm not a mushroom.
Please stop. Where does he get these stupid jokes from?
He listens to the Daily Dad Jokes podcast.
Oh, great. More dad jokes for me.
We've delivered over 15,000 jokes to over 3 million listeners, and man, the postage fees are killing us. Listen to the Daily Dad Jokes podcast every day on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And guess what? So are we.
Just in case you forgot, I'm Tori Deal. I'm a 6-time finalist and a Challenge champion.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira, and I've been gracing your screens for the last 2 decades. I am a veteran challenger and challenge all-star.
And speaking of all-stars, All Stars 4 is finally here.
I'm going to be honest. I literally thought this day was never going to come.
Well, the challenge gods have answered our prayers, and we're going to be right here along with you fans covering every episode on the podcast.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, redemption seekers, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
Anyone can win, relationships matter, and only one all-star will claim the title of Challenge Champion.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, it's the other side, and we're back, and I see you.
Okay.
So I'll do my two, and then you'll do 2-1, and I'll finish this up. Mm-hmm. Okay, great. All right, Mike. I thought a lot about this.
Top two, you got to think about it.
I really believe.
Could be torturous.
I genuinely believe the second best game I played this year was Sifu. I really believe it's Sifu.
Wait, why are you saying this with a weird voice?
Because
or you
a lot of people,
I should think it's lower or higher. What?
I think a lot of people,
we all know what your number one
of course,
is,
so. Like, come on. But a lot of people, I think, overlooked this game. Like, I was looking at people, like, people sort of forgot that it came out after, you know, a month or two after it came out.
Oh, on the official list or from outlets much bigger than us? I agree. It's not very represented.
And it's like, why? This game is so good. It's like, it's the most fun combat innovation I've seen in a pretty long time. And like, I just played the Callisto Protocol, which, you know, is also trying to innovate in combat. And I would say way less successfully than Sifu. Sifu is a little bit of a dabble in a series of genres, including like some roguelite elements and like, you know, the old sort of kung fu beat 'em ups. But it's so fun and it's so challenging and satisfying. And it's well, like, the design of it is great. I thought it was just a masterpiece. We kept it in our episode. That's how much we both liked it. So for those of you who haven't played it or, you know, haven't even heard of it, possibly go back and give it, like, check it out. It's a really hard game. And I think it's rare that a game that hard leaves this good, like, this good of an impression when it's not made by From Software. But I thought it was fucking awesome. I loved it. It's the only game other than Elden Ring I've gone back to several times this year. Because I really enjoyed it. That's my number two.
Played Wordle once and you were done.
That's right. Wordle I played once. I was like, great game. Number five.
Incredible. It's my number five pick. I only need to play it once.
Yeah.
Speaking of really, really hard games, my number two is Elden Ring.
Wow. That's high. I'm surprised. For you.
Well, you would think I would assume you'd guess that I would have mentioned it by now. Mm-hmm. Or like, it has to at least be an honorable mention. But I don't feel like I have to say much. In fact, it almost is forcing me to put it on this list. I don't have that much fun playing Elden Ring as people. It's complicated. Sometimes I do have fun. Sometimes it really upsets me. I don't like the feeling of being frustrated and upset. When I finally succeed, it doesn't give me a big endorphin rush. I just get a mild sense of, like, thank God. So, like, I keep shitting on it, but I'm like, it's my number two game of the year because I look around the world and, like, everyone loves it. And it's really ambitious and it combines the form. And when I'm in the world, I'm like, when I look around, when I play Elden Ring and I look around, I'm like, that's cool. That's cool. That guy looks awesome. I love this, except that I can't play it or beat it or, like, interact with it in a way that's fun to me. But, like, everything about it's really, really good. It's brilliant that it's open world now, instead of, like, specifically with the FromSoft formula that works so well. Everything about it's great. Everyone loves it. I'm so happy for them that they're getting that from
I'm
it.
So
like, that was enough to make me be like, I guess it's my number two.
Wow. Okay. So like, that's how I feel about some games that I play that you really love. And I'm like, I don't love it, but I see that it's good.
But so much respect for Elden Ring.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay, that's interesting.
And my understanding, or like, the story doesn't ever congeal to me, but my understanding from people I respect is that it's really good if you dig into it and fully grok it, but I just can't.
I will always maintain my stance on that, which is it may all tie together on the spreadsheet. I'm not disagreeing with that. It might be an
There's
awesome spreadsheet.
There's people who dig in enough. Like, you could watch an Elden Ring Explained video that ties it all up for you, for sure.
By the way, I watched a 30-minute video on the story of Bloodborne before that episode, and I was like, what a cool fucking story. Not in the game, really.
That is not in the game, but it's cool. Good for you. Yeah.
The Elden Ring story is fucking cool. I've watched that video,
too. You really Donnie Darko'd it.
Yeah, but, like, I didn't experience it, therefore it's not in the game. You know what I mean? Like, that's the rule. So what's your number one? I'm like, I have no idea what it's going to be.
My number one. I promised myself I'd do it this way.
Okay. All right. Oh, I took a vow. I slit my hand and, and like mixed it with the stone. What is it?
A classic rom-com slow clap. Everybody cheer for Sifu, my number one game of the year 2022.
Oh, shit. Really?
For sure. That was such a bad bit. It's by a dev team called Slow Clap. Anyway, also because Discord cuts out clapping, Adam didn't even know that I was doing it.
I was like,
bit.
What? Yeah, I didn't know
so
what you were
just
doing.
Just confusion. Yeah. Hopefully the audience heard me clapping. But anyway, all I want to add is I've never even seen the end of this game either, and that's why it's a great contrast for Elden Ring. I'm only on level 3 of 5 of Sifu, and I'm still playing it and drilling it. And I dream one day that it will respect me enough that I will proceed to the end of the game. And like, I don't feel frustrated. I'm honored to be engaging with it. I really feel that the name Sifu, which means teacher, is so perfect, because I've never felt more, except maybe DDR or Guitar Hero or Rock Band, like I'm literally learning a skill by playing, that the game is instructing me on how to get good at it, and that I feel that growth. The art style is beautiful. Like, for my money, in a world where everyone's trying, I mean, Sony mainly, is trying to be like, look at their faces, they're real actors, their eyebrows can move now, they have emotions. I'm like, Sifu looks better than all this shit to me. Like, Sifu yeah. looks better than Horizon Forbidden West because it's so awesome. So I could say so much. They paint shadows onto the actual bodies, so it's like, it's technically cel-shaded, but it does not feel cel-shaded. It feels like a unique look that you haven't experienced before. Okay, all that aside, the dominant form of game in arcades at one point were these games where you just walk to the right and beat people up. The Simpsons, Streets of Rage, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, we all know these games. Shredder's Revenge, you know, every once in a while they try to bring it back. And I gotta say, when I play stuff like Shredder's Revenge, all it reminds me is that games have gotten much better. Like,
yeah.
it reminds me that yeah, Double yeah. Dragon and Streets of Rage is not that fun to do. There's a reason those games went out of fashion, and other genres are better and more interesting than that.
Mm-hmm.
But Sifu, just like, I'm always really amazed when the new thing gives me the old feeling, right? I talked about it with Neon White and Sonic, but Sifu's the first time where I'm like, this feels like the first time I ever played Streets of Rage, where I'm like, my God, the power that's in my hands. This feels like really being a kung fu master. The fact that it's so stylishly and elegantly told, it's such an archetypal. It reminded me of Ghost of Tsushima in terms of its respect for the storytelling tradition. Like, there's an old boy reference in the camera mm-hmm, in mm-hmm. this game. There's mm-hmm. The opening tutorial gives you, it foreshadows all the events of the game, but it also represents the character's inner mind at that moment. And it's a montage of them training and growing up to the point where you're going to control them. And it's the credits of the game. And it's all red, like Enter the Dragon. Like, everything about this game delights me. You play the same levels over and over. And I swear to God, I could play that opening level in the slums 5,000 times. I never get tired of
it. It's so
it's
fun.
It's fucking awesome.
Yeah. Like,
I love it.
Like, Sifu,
and I don't know why it doesn't frustrate me, and Elden Ring does, but it just doesn't.
Maybe because you're getting better at it. Maybe because it's easier to get better at Sifu. Sifu is also gives you that tactile, kinetic, snappy reward that a great game gives you.
So crisp.
Yes, yeah. It's the thing I like about Metal Gear Solid 5. Metal Gear Solid 5 feels so crisp. You know, like it's like bam, like this guy does exactly the thing you want him to do, and he does it fast, and it rules. Sifu, that's like the primary experience of the game, you know,
and the little choices, like the instant the killing blow at the end of a run hit touches your head, it cuts to black.
Yep.
The
yep.
end. Like, I love yep. that. Like, you've lost consciousness. The end.
I love the way so the cool. guy holds the fucking bat, which you get in the third level, and just go to
yes.
town on dudes in suits. And it's like, yeah, dude, this is a game. I'm fucking into this.
And like all the paint play in the museum
yep.
level, all
yep.
the different things they do in the museum level. Like, this game, I did. Actually, I take back what I said about Elden Ring, because I said it never happens. This is a game that had me standing up. Like, when I beat the boss of the second level, who I know you
that
also hate,
son of
Adam,
a bitch. Yeah, yeah.
I stood up and went, ah!
It's great, right?
Like fucking Walter White just blew up Tuco with some meth or whatever.
Yeah. yeah. It's so good, man. Yeah, this game is... The other thing is, like, as you said, the genre is basically dead, and now I would not be surprised if, like, a bunch of fighting
games could revitalize
back.
The genre.
Yeah, and
sure.
I hope it does, because yeah. it's, like, actually, it is a fun genre.
And they've been honing... It is their formula. Like,
yeah.
see their previous
yeah, yeah,
game,
yeah.
Absolver. They've been working towards this for a few games, and you got it, guys. It's perfected now.
Yeah, they're definitely doing it.
This could be your FromSoft formula. Like, you could ride this for a long time.
I'll buy every game. I will buy every one of them.
All right. The time has come to journey to Foregone Conclusionville, where I give our number one game
probably
of the year.
Probably the last time this game will come out.
Oh, yeah. I'll never talk about it again. never talk about it again. Look, so Elden Ring is one of my favorite games I've ever played, ever. Like, I think you could make a case it's a top 10 game ever made.
That it's carrying the year for you. Yeah. Like, it is a notable year just because it's the year of
it makes
Elden
the
Ring.
Whole year good because that game came out. Like, I love it. I love it. And I didn't even like From Software games about 18 months ago. So fortunately for me, I got into them right around the time we decided.
And now you like them all, right?
Yeah.
Not just the
yeah.
open world. You like the linear
I
one.
Do. I yeah. replayed Dark Souls 3 this year to see, like, do I still like it? I do still like it, but Elden Ring is so clearly better than any of these other games to me. It's very clear. Most of you who've listened to this or listen to this podcast have probably played Elden Ring. So I don't need to go on and on and on about it. If you haven't played Elden Ring, if it's not the kind of game you would play, let me tell you what it is about it that's so great that I think might actually get you invested in it.
It's the rings. They're very
They're
old.
So
They're
good.
Elden.
They're beautiful rings. No, so the most people who've played a From Software game and quit and didn't play this game probably think, well, it's going to punch you in the face all the time. And yes, it is going to do that. But this is the team who made
that
game.
But it makes
game.
You tough. You need it. You're soft.
That's right. Soften up. We're going to teach it hard like a board. Now, so the thing that is great about this is basically its accessibility. Like, you are able to navigate problems with different bosses in different areas of the world, kind of with about, I don't know, 10 times more tools than any other From Software game before. There's tons of ways to be good at this game. It's not just you got to be great.
Battle of Torrent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You don't have to be great at just the hack and slash stuff. You can use magic. You can use arrows. You can use throwables. You can use... So there's like, there's dragon spells. There's just so many ways to attack a problem. That makes the game a lot more accessible. And I think just being in the world itself is a fun experience independent of the combat. Like, I think rolling around like you just described and seeing the art direction in this game is like emotional almost. Like, going into...
Like I said, one of the major parts of the frustration is I love art, and I think this is highly worthy art,
100%.
Obviously. Like, I'm not the first to say this. I roll around the world almost, it feels like mean, or it feels like I'm not invited to the party. I roll around the world going like I finally get to meet a boss and it's like a floating Sphinx zombie thing. And I'm like, that thing's so fucking cool. I wish the game would allow me to see the other cool things
I know.
That I'll never see.
Yeah, man. And like, if that's...
Because I really think it looks big, awesome. It looks baller.
Well, I'll tell you this.
Like, if FromSoft were a kid, and this was like the bulk of my childhood. If FromSoft were a kid at recess sketching in their notebook, I would be like, I have to be friends with that kid. Look how fucking cool their imagination is.
It does feel like, holy shit, I got a seat. Like, I need to look at this. Like, it does draw you in. I love this game so much, Mike. I will set aside any game to play it with you so that you can get to see the pieces of it. I promise you, I will make time to get you through this game if that's something you want
to
do.
To backpack me.
I love it that much. Like, I got a Twitch end of the year wrap up this year, by the way. Like, I don't know if you saw that, but you know, I was in the top 1% of streamers of Elden Ring.
Oh, wow.
That's how much I love
see,
it.
I of time. Yeah,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I would put play it on easy or cinematic mode if such a thing existed to see the rest of it.
For sure.
I really would.
So all I can say is, like, it's still a From Software game, guys. So, like, if you hate that and you can't get on board with it.
Those spectral ghostly boatmen. Like,
those
the boss
things
fights
are
objectively really cool. They're just all red.
Yeah. And, like, to defend a thing that I know I've said I don't think there's story in the game. There isn't. But the lore that supports some of the things that are in the game is really cool if you're one of those people that wants to look into it.
I don't know. But you often we argue, we quibble about, and I yield because I'm like, yeah. It's a basic story, but it's a story. You say, like, you know, Link has a story. Then Elden Ring surely has a story.
I would say it doesn't have a story on the level of you can't play the game without stopping and like doing something else that's not playing the game to get the story. You know, whereas, again, Zelda...
Like reading Reddit or something.
Reading Reddit or, like reading item descriptions and, like, trying to piece things together, like, and keeping notes and shit. Like, it's just not... That's not a story experience on the level of, like, I get emotional impact from that. That's it. Mm-hmm. But the things that are there, like if you want to do that research, are very cool. They really are very cool. So you should check that out. Yeah, I mean, you should see our Elden Ring episode. We waxed very poetic about it, and I could go on for hours and hours. But I'll say, like, not since Breath of the Wild have I played a game that I loved this much.
And if you were, I think on that episode, I was even more negative. And just for the record, in between, I've had phases where I'm like, okay, I think I'm getting this. And I have a lot of fun for like 8 hours. And then I lose it again. And it comes and goes.
I would literally be streaming it again right now if it wouldn't piss off the people who come to my stream. Like if it wouldn't piss them off for having to watch it again, I would play it again. That's how much I fucking loved it. So yeah, best game. I thought it was a great game. Somewhere in my top 10 games, it's definitely in there. Give it a shot if you haven't played it.
Well, our ones and twos were just a do-si-do. I like being unique, so I liked last year where I had a game. My number one was a game you never ever heard of. But you know, I gotta be honest. I really do think Sifu and Elden Ring were both tremendous accomplishments.
I just was
and it's so that's interesting. It's a year of hard ass games, like being the cream of the crop.
Yeah.
And I do. I will say that is a theme for me. Is I'm kind of. I am interested in new explorations of arcade style gameplay or actual real punishments rather than an open world that just slowly breaks and crumbles before you inevitably as you proceed. It's interesting to experiment with both. Both. I like both are interesting.
You know? I'm just thrilled that you I know we kept Sifu. I'm just thrilled that it stuck with you. Like that makes me happy because I love that game.
Mainly because of this show, I'm a dropper. I drop games, delete them, and never play them again for the rest of my life. That's my most common exchange. I know a game's really made an impact if I go back. Like I played Fallout 4 a couple times, but now it's at the point where I don't think I will ever play it again. It feels rote.
It's hard to play it now. Yeah,
dude, I've deleted and reinstalled Sifu 5 or 6 times this year because I keep deleting it because I have other stuff to do, and then I go. I really want to play Sifu tonight, though. Like, I'll just play one level of Sifu. It's that fun and satisfying.
Yeah. Man, it's a great game. What a fun year. We got to talk through all the big releases this year, you and I.
Mm-hmm.
And those of you who are like, but there's a bunch of games that I like you didn't play. We're sorry. We are limited by by being just two guys and having the amount of time that we have. But we are committed to trying all the big releases. And to trying to all the genres that are not our favorite, to trying those
and
too.
And smalls, dude.
And smalls, correct.
I played, I mentioned Immortality, Vampire Survivors, and Citizen Sleeper. I'm all about the small.
I would argue those are big releases in the sense that they made a
Citizen
splash.
Citizen Sleeper?
No, that one I haven't heard of. That's right, yeah.
Boom. All right, points
that's
on
right.
the board.
Points for
I
you.
I like obscurity points, as people know. Yeah.
He's got a running total that he carries around.
Esoteric points.
That's right. Yeah, so if you enjoyed this podcast and would like to hear more podcasts that Mike and I do, because we do more, scoot on over to our Patreon, patreon.com/smallbeans, where you can hear podcasts about movies, about the art of directing, about the multiverse as a cinematic concept, about the concept of depression, dinosaurs. We used to have a news podcast even. We do it all over at Small Beans. We'd love to have you. If you like it, feel free to throw us a buck or two. We'd really appreciate it. Join the Discord Mike mentioned earlier and be part of the culture that created Citizen Sleeper, number 5 game of the year for Michael Swaim. Anything to add, my dude?
No, that's right. The Small Beans community came together and created Citizen Sleeper. You're welcome.
They created the recommendation.
No, that's it. Well said. But yeah, I'm saying it a third time to remind myself, who will edit this episode and the audience, that if you actually dig into the show notes or the copy or whatever, the description of the episode, you'll find an invite to our Discord. And that's absolutely free if you want to just come and lurk and see what we're all about. And then maybe someday you'll be interested in the other podcasts. We'd love to have you. We watch movies every Monday night at 6 p.m. Pacific time.
Starting the week off right with an art film.
Yeah.
That's right.
All right, guys.
See you next year.
Say video games.
Work complete.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
I am so excited about this podcast, The Bright Side. You guys are giving people a chance to shine a light on their lives, shine a light on a little advice that they want to share.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
Hi, this is Kurt Woodsmith. You remember me from such TV comedies as That 70s Show and That 90s Show on Netflix. I'll never forget the words that my grandfather said just before he kicked the bucket. He said, "Watch how far I can kick this bucket." People ask me where I get my dad jokes from. I tell them to listen to the Daily Dad Jokes podcast. Listen to Daily Dad Jokes every day on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.